Everyone, welcome to the Trade Waiters. We're back. We're here. We're together. We're here to talk about comics. And this is going to be a little bit of a special episode. I'm going to think of it like lightning round Trade Waiters, where each one is going to be kind of a little mini Trade Waiter episode, not with as many character revealing questions. But but today, I thought it would be interesting to go through the winners of the Mini Comics Award. So there is a new organization. It's been they just passed their 1 year anniversary, called the Cartoonist Cooperative, and this year they presented the Mini Comics Award. But actually, the Mini Comics Award has been going on for 3 years now.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it's been kind of wrapped into the umbrella of the Cartoonist Cooperative. And it, because like a lot of the same people are involved, it's like they started with this mini comic award and they're like, we need to be even more organized and, you know, in favor of helping cartoonists and helping each other. And they kind of grew the co-op out of that. So I think it's a match made of heaven. It's wonderful. And full disclosure, in the interest of full disclosure, I am one of the people who contributed to the prize pool for the mini comics award. However, I was not a judge or reviewer. I did not nominate any of these comics. I did not. The only ones I read were just I happened to have read them, and they also got nominated. So I had no influence on the outcome, but I was one of the donors to the prize pool for my second year. And I did want to point out to people as we go through this that you too could donate to the prize pool if you want. There were 28 people who donated to the prize pool this year, which I'm not going to disclose how much I donated, but if you average that out to the $3,500 prize pool, it's only a little over $100. So that should let you know that a little can really go a long way in this context or another context related to it. It's a lot easier than you think to become a philanthropist or patron of the arts. You know, like I think people's concept of that is like, oh, you have to wait until you're like a millionaire before you can make an impact on the community of the arts. And I just wanted to say that's not true at all. And I'm really grateful for this opportunity to be able to give back to the community of comics in such a direct and effective way. So yeah, to start off, let's just do a speed read of the winners. So the way it worked is that it was an open nomination process, so people could submit their own mini comics from all around the world. I think the restrictions were that it had to be published within the last calendar year, and it had to be, you had to send in a copy of the comic. You had to like send it into the organization for review. And it also, like, it wasn't required that it was in English, but the panel was English speaking. So the way that they phrased that restriction is like, we're not going to say don't send us a comic in another language, but we're only going to be able to interpret it through an English-speaking lens. And so I think they got, I probably could look it up on the website, but they got hundreds and hundreds of nominees, and they sorted them into a few different categories. So the categories were autobio, sci-fi, romance, and horror, and fantasy. Okay. And the winners, so each category had a set of five nominations, and then each one had a winner out of that. And there was a really cute awards show that the Cartoonist Cooperative put on as well. That's on YouTube and you can watch it, which I thought was a fun touch. But we're going to be talking about most of the winners today. So in autobio, we're going to be talking about Fancies. In sci-fi, we're going to be talking about Marrow, aka Rodney's Law. In romance, we're going to be discussing Crossed Signals, but that one will be brief. In horror, we're going to be discussing Bottoms Up by Barbara Benes. And in fantasy, we're going to be discussing The Bird Daughters by Madeline McGrain. So congratulations again to all of the winners of this year's Mini Comics Award. To start off, I should come up with a character building question. For the character building question today, I would like to ask, If you keep a collection of mini comics, and if you do, which ones do you consider the prize of your collection?
I'm JD, and I've shouted out this mini comic before at least once, possibly more than once, on the Trade Waiters, but I am once again going to shout out Letters to an Absent Father by Mare Odomo, which is a very tiny Pokemon fan comic. And I am not an expert in Pokemon. I'm slightly too old to know any of the Pokemons. But even so, I really appreciate this comic and how sad it is because apparently, and I didn't know this till I read this comic, the main character in Pokemon, like you never see his father. His father is apparently like a famous Pokemon trainer, and that's what Ash wants to be as well, but he doesn't ever see his father. And so every page in this comic is like a little letter with a comic about stuff that's happening in Ash's life and then asking questions to his father that he'll never get answers to.
Excellent. That is also one of my treasures. I love that comic.
Oh man, this is a hard one. My name is Jeff Ellis. When I moved recently, I had to downsize a lot of my books. One of the things that I did not get rid of, basically any of, was all my mini comics, because once you get rid of them, that's it. There's no, you're not getting it back. Like, it's gone forever. Whereas books, you can always go buy another copy of a book at a used bookstore. It's so hard though. I'm like, I trying to like pick between all my precious children. I mean, I think the things that are precious to me are usually the things that are like almost like the prequel to like something else. Like I know this is like an internal recommendation, but like I have a Mighta Killwa mini comic that is sort of the like twinkle in JD's eye that became Phobos and Deimos. And like, that's the kind of stuff that I always think about when I look at my mini comics, is like, oh, this is, you know, this is like a little mini that Steve Rolston did, and then now he went on to do something like something more substantial. Or this is like this mini comic from a friend of mine, and now they've got a graphic novel that they published or something. Just sort of like the early works can be really, that can always be really compelling. And then I don't know, I can't remember the name, but I do have a mini comic for a guy named Neil McRae that I met at Stumptown. And like, I think it was called Pennies. And like, that's a little mini comic about a guy who keeps coughing up pennies and then eventually starts coughing up bigger and bigger things. And like, I don't know, it was sort of like kind of a horror comic, but also kind of like very touching. And it's, again, it's just like this little tiny like mini comic that hardly anyone will ever have the experience of reading, but like I've got it in a like wooden box on top of my bookshelf.
That 6-page Mighta Killwa comic was the very first mini comic I ever made.
Oh wow. I think I have a copy too. That's my treasure now.
You probably do.
Yeah, I'm Jam. I resonate a lot with what you shared, both of you. I also really treasure mini comics because it's like that early work from that creator who ended up like going on to even better things. It just feels like such an amazing, you know, Nardwar style like time capsule of a person. But it also, I feel like they're kind of almost tokens of relationships in certain ways. Like a mini comic, yeah, I've even like, especially fandom mini comics, I've started getting more into, where someone could just kind of express their love of something through this little contained work, like a mini comic or even a collaborative zine. And it's some, not something that could ever get bigger. It's not something that could ever be monetized in a traditional way. And a lot of the mini comics I got as, you know, trades or with the people that I met at certain conventions, and it's always tied to that meeting for me. So it's like, I remember when I saw, you know, Der Shing at Ape 2008, for example, and I was able to get this Snowball in Hell mini comic, right? Which didn't end up being a bigger story, but I remember that meeting with Der Shing, and I really appreciate mini comics for that. So yeah, thank you all for sharing. And I wanted to ask, as by way of introduction, what do you think the role of mini comics is in the broader comics community or comics as an art form?
I feel like mini comics are kind of the epitome of comics in a way. They're kind of like more raw. It's like instead of having like a like an MP3 that you download off a website, this is like the record that that track is originally from. Like the there's less, even if you do all the art on a computer, it still feels like there's less that there's more hand involvement, that's more made by hand. It's a shorter jump from the artist to the reader, if that makes sense.
There's more of a direct connection. I mean, yeah, I make a mini comic every year. I make a Christmas letter in the form of a comic, and I used to hand draw them and then Xerox them, and eventually I started just drawing them in Clip Studio and printing them and hand cutting and binding them. And last year was the year. So now I'm in my 40s, and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to pay someone to just like make mini comics for me. So shout out to Copies Plus, your greatest source in the city of Vancouver for mini comic production. If you want to not do the cutting and stapling yourself, they can help you out. I will say, like, there's a part of me that's a little sad. Like, there's something about just the cutting and the stapling. It helps. For me, it feels it's that intimacy where like I'm putting that effort into the work to give to someone. But also like when you want to produce like 200 mini comics and mail them in a timely fashion, paying someone else to do it for you really takes the stress out of your December.
I will say that it did not diminish the connection that I felt to you this year, Jeff.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad to hear that. But yeah, I mean, I do think there's like a much more unfiltered connection when you do a mini comic. I think because partly there's less editorial as well. Like usually the artist is just putting this together and producing it. There isn't someone who's like making suggestions about redrawing or shuffling things. It's a little more spontaneous, right? And I don't know. Recently I've had multiple people come to me and say, I want to get more into comics. I want to make a graphic novel. What should I do? How do I get started? Right. And here's free for everyone who's ever going to ask me this question. Here it is. It's in podcast form. Like, don't start with your graphic novel because it's going to be way more work. It's going to be way more intimidating. You're way more likely to burn out and not finish it. So make a mini comic. Just whatever idea you have, just get started. And like, maybe you only do the first chapter. Or like you're doing a little intro, maybe it's a little teaser, but just like start there, make a little mini comic. And if you get that done and you enjoyed that process, make another mini comic and build off that first mini comic. And then maybe you're on your third mini comic. Okay, now let's maybe start talking strategy for like a graphic novel, but like just get it done. Go through beginning to end and have a few little mini comics under your belt first because if you can handle that, you're ready for a graphic novel. And also you have these mini comics that can help build a connection with an audience and have people that are now going to maybe be interested in a graphic novel. Maybe they're going to back your fundraiser or whatever. But everybody wants to do their 400 page graphic novel first. And I'm like, no, let's make a 24 page mini comic. That's
Six pages, do 6 pages. That's what I
no,
did.
four
And now it's
pages.
300 pages.
I say start with four.
Yeah.
Start as small as you can.
Yeah,
But yeah,
sorry. Six pages,
that's
12 pages. Yeah.
that's great advice, Jeff. I really believe in mini comics because I think it is where the most experimental work in comics can come to play, with the exception of possibly web comics. But mini comics are short enough that as a creative, you're willing to do something kind of crazy just to see if it'll work. And if it doesn't work out, it's all right. You know, it's not like you've committed to a graphic novel. For example, like say you wanted to do something really interesting with like a watercolor wash. You know, like maybe after 24 pages of this multi-layer watercolor construction situation that you've been devising for yourself, you realize that this is a really insane way to do something and you never want to do it again. Maybe through that process, you find a really clever workaround and you that helps you extend it to the length of a graphic novel. You could make it like a really odd shape. You can use a really odd printing method. So I've seen screen printed comics before. Which is a I've seen lino cut comics, you know. I've seen all sorts of interesting things that are done in the medium that people are willing to do because a mini comic is shorter. So yeah, even as a reader, I would strongly encourage you to seek out mini comics because they are some really interesting works. And I do think that we see some really interesting work in this slate of winners. So let's get down to it. The first one we're going to discuss is in Autobio. We're going to discuss Fancies by Alex Cara. I'm going to read a quick bio here. Alex Cara is a comic creator and illustrator based in Christchurch, New Zealand. Her work has been published in The Three Words, Beatnik 2016, an anthology of New Zealand women's comics, The New Zealand School Journal, and Lockdown, Tales from Aotearoa. The Christchurch Art Gallery, Te Puna o Waiwetu in 2020. So this is the first work. It's Fancies. Fancies was an autobio work that seemed to trace Alex's childhood in a certain way. It was a collection of vignettes, a collection of shorter comics that followed Alex through a childhood, maybe not her childhood 100% of the time. It was a little unclear to me, but what I took away from it is that it was a meditation on media's impact on a person's upbringing or childhood experience. And I'm interested to know what you two think.
That's super interesting. I hadn't, for some reason, I'd missed that this was in the autobio category. That totally changes the story. Because, I mean, it's very interesting. It's very, it has a definite vibe to it. There's clearly a through line here. But I am only now just thinking about how do all these connect? And how do they all connect with the author? It's weird. Like the first part is this character. I don't think we even ever hear who this character's name is, but it's sort of I was thinking of it as like terrible feral 17th century children and someone's trying to raise them with 21st century like.
Yeah, gentle parenting vibes, right?
Yeah. And it's not working because there's these like terrible feral 17th century children.
Goblin children. I was trying to figure out the context of this as well, where it's like it's funny because we just came off this strip comic, this golden age strip comic, and it kind of reminds me of a golden age strip comic somehow.
Yeah.
Where it's just like very, very old style in the way that the pages are narrated. And it's like you're kind of observationally narrating the life of this goblin child through the perspective of someone who's like trying to use gentle parenting techniques.
But then the other stories are also really good. There's one with the one, I think this is the one that I like the best, the second one, where it's basically just this child living her day-to-day life and kind of not really fitting in. Like there's a grandparent who's asked to read Ranma and like doesn't really get it. There's a lot of like people not getting each other, right? Oh, and then the other two are just like dreams, which are also really interesting.
Yeah, and the feral child shows up again.
Yeah,
I thought that was interesting too. I liked the way that it tied back, and it was almost like a small callback but not such a strong connection. Almost like a walk-on.
Like, I feel like at the end of this, I don't know that I've learned anything, but I feel like I have this, like, ephemeral connection to the author that is impossible to pin down. It's like spending some time inside her head without actually getting any of her memories, if that makes sense.
I think that's... I think only when we're talking about this now, because I didn't think about the categories. And so when you bring up that this was autobio, my first thought was like, Fancies is autobio? And then now I'm like looking back at my notes and I'm like flipping back through it and I'm thinking, yeah, like I think I have a better sense of Alex Cara and who Alex Cara is based on reading this mini comic. And I also now know that there is a real book called Lesbian Nuns Breaking the Silence.
I think all pop culture references are clearly real things.
Yeah.
Fun.
And like, I know where this confusion comes from, because the very first chapter feels the least like autobio.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like a retroactive self-memory.
Mm.
That makes sense. Because like, who remembers their childhood that far back that
exactly.
clearly?
But you might recall, or from knowing other babies in your life, you must be able to extrapolate backwards. It's like, oh, well, I was one of these feral goblin children. I had to have been because they're all feral goblin children. And so maybe, like, I don't know, maybe in a sense of throwback, but I agree with you, JD. Like, my favorite was the second one. What really resonated with me was the way that media resonates so strongly with your interpretation of the world. And so there's a moment, so that the character is really interested in Ranma comics. So her parent gives her a lot of really interesting comics to read, even as a young child, which I thought was neat. So we have Moomin, and we have Ranma, and we have some other like Bugs Life comics, and they kind of weave through the character's interpretation of her daily life. So she's at the pool, and then she like sucks in her gut, and she's like, I'm going to look more like Ranma this way. And she kind of visualized the pool and has this very like cartoon logic for how she could jump across the paddles and avoid the sharks that she's imagining in the water, with connecting that to an even earlier memory of when she was like 3 and looking at sharks in the aquarium or something. And I like, my childhood memories are very unclear, but something about that really resonated quite deeply with me, where I can remember how the media I was consuming kind of affected my understanding of the logic of the world. And I thought that was a really interesting way to portray that.
Yeah.
I'm also obsessed with the way that she's got these like kid drawings in her comic, because they're flawless. These look, if they're not scans of her own drawings as a child,
yeah,
then they, I don't know how these were made. Because I checked at the end, she like credits everything, like any other involvement any other person had in this comic is credited. So this is not, I assume, the work of a different child. This is like, she drew these.
Yeah.
I took the same idea, because I thought it was really, really interesting to include like her childhood drawings in connection to the memories at the time. I find it very unusual that someone could have such a vivid memory.
That's such a, yeah, I mean, if these are like her own drawings, that's such a great premise for talking about your own life. I can't believe no one's ever thought of that before. It's so good.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah, I think that's got to be the answer, because they integrate so well in the stories. And, you know, I mean, there's the interesting things happening in the background. Like, there's the drawing happening while she has chicken pox. And then not long after that, like, one of her parents is now laid up on the couch with chicken pox, you know. I was like, oh yeah, I remember when my parents already had chicken pox, but I remember this is at that era when people are like, oh, if your kid gets chicken pox, make sure all of them get chicken pox. Like,
that's because there wasn't a vaccine. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember myself and my sister being laid up with chicken pox at the same time. Yeah.
All four of my siblings, I think, all at the same time had chicken pox. And I was the eldest, so I got hit with it the hardest because I was in my teens.
Oof.
Like, then, like, probably like 2 years later, they were like, oh, there's a vaccine. You shouldn't actually get your kids with chicken pox. And I was like, what the fuck? But anyway.
Oh, that's good. How about the last one? The last, the dream with Tom Hiddleston and the dream with the earthquake. For me, I really liked the dream with the earthquake, or post-earthquake, I should say. So the author is like rummaging through used bookstores, and she has a very strong memory of like the treasures that she finds in a used bookstore. But the bookstore was destroyed in what I presume was the Christchurch earthquake, because this author is from Christchurch. And
Oh.
so her dream is about that she found, you know, like she's so desperate to like find these books and get them before she has to like go away. And she talks about Wellington, so perhaps it's like I have to get back on the ferry from Christchurch to, or from Wellington to the South Island, because Wellington is the capital. It's kind of the cultural center of New Zealand. But this kind of like treasure hunting vibe and like being able to find these like rare and beautiful things, it kind of reminds me of our earlier discussion of just like mini comics as rare and beautiful things.
I mean, Thirst was that chapter, and that one is the one I think really I felt like I learned the most about Alex. I think the Tom Hiddleston dream was probably my least favorite of the chapters, and I think that one felt very much like somebody you run into on the bus, and they're like, "Oh, I had this weird dream. Let me tell you about it." And you're just like, yeah, okay. I mean, that was a dream that didn't make any sense. Like,
I mean, I don't know. Dream, like, not every dream makes for an interesting story, but often they do, at least the ones worth remembering. And I like that as a narrative thing.
there were aspects of the dream that were interesting, but just like, my takeaway from it was it felt the same as like anyone else telling me about the weird dream they had yesterday.
Sure.
I guess
Yeah,
I don't know.
I think every weird dream that someone had yesterday is at least a little interesting. Maybe that's just me.
All right, I don't know. I
I'm Team Dream fan. I'm here for it. You can tell me all your weird dreams.
I mean, I guess like just sometimes like a weird concept from a dream, you're like, oh, that's interesting. But like when someone just tells you the whole thing and you're like, yeah, okay, like, yeah. And then what happened? Yeah, it doesn't make any sense, did it? Because you're just dreaming, because like there's no narrative structure to this. Like it can become a bit rambling, I guess, is what I've
Sure.
learned.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't want to read a whole graphic novel that's one dream.
Yeah.
I think
Well,
this
did
is
you
the
read
length
O
of
Human
time it
Star?
deserves.
Okay.
Oh, Human Star, it took its genesis in a dream.
Oh, really? Did not know that. This is another book we should do an episode on some
I
point.
agree. Anyway, let's wrap this one up because we have several to go through, but Fancy's final thoughts.
Well, now I'm just thinking about all the angry comments from people with dreams being like, I can't believe.
We
Anyway.
don't get comments. We got
Whatever.
comments on our Alita episode. That was it.
All right. Whatever.
And they were angry.
Overall, I don't need to talk about that.
My comment is that I really appreciate us talking about this comic because I think my appreciation of it has quadrupled.
I agree. I'm really grateful I have the opportunity to talk about it with someone else.
I think I appreciate this more having spoken with you guys about it, especially I think because I was just reading it as a quirky mini comic. And now that it's been recontextualized as an autobio, I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, this is like a really thinking outside of the box autobio comic, right? And
Who
so it's,
knew book clubs are a good idea?
yeah.
All
This is cool. No,
right.
this was one of the ones that I like, yeah, I think out of all of the different mini comics that I read for this episode, I think this was one of the ones that like stood out. This one and Marrow, I think, are my like top two.
All right. Well, let's get to Marrow, which I think is my top one. So in the sci-fi category, Marrow, aka Rodney's Law, by Sloane Hong. Sloane Hong is a Korean Tao-i Weaver illustrator, comic artist, and tattooer rumored to lurk somewhere deep within the agonizing suburban sprawl of Aotearoa, New Zealand. So one thing that was noted in the award ceremony was like the first two winners were shocked that that they were both from New Zealand. I think they were both shocked because like it seems like the culture of New Zealand is so isolated that it seems like something that doesn't often get out. And so for two of them to have been honored in the same slate really affected them as winners. And I thought it was really cool that like this mini comics award took such a global spread that it was able to honor these people. So two ended up from being from the Midwest slash Minneapolis, and two are from New Zealand. And the other one was German. Yeah, so Marrow was a sci-fi story that is about farmed meat, lab-grown meat, and what that would be like. Yeah, what are your thoughts?
Oh my God. Okay, so first of all, I wanted to confirm this was the science fiction winner.
Correct, not Autobio.
Well, I was gonna say, like, my takeaway from this was like, I was like, this should be the horror entry. This should
I
not be
almost agree, yeah.
like this was, I think, one of the most horrifying comics I have read. Like, and I again, I'm trying to mean this in a good way. Like, this comic gave me the creeps. I was like, what the fuck is this? This was it. I like could not stop. Once I started, I couldn't stop reading. I had to get to the end. And like, man, like especially the very ending, I was just like, wow, you're just gonna like leave it there? Like just solid 100%, 10 out of 10, like A plus comic. Like, yeah, I think this was my absolute favorite of all of the mini comics that I read for this. And just the pacing, the storytelling, the way it kind of leads you into it, and oh, like just the implications at the end, right? Like, because I mean, again, like farmed meat, like that in and of itself is creepy, but like the reveal, like doesn't, like clearly they're using like human DNA if this is the outcomes they're getting, right? Like if they were using cow DNA, you'd be getting like a half-formed cow
Yeah.
so I'm spoiling this whole thing, but like it's
Oh,
like
yeah. We probably should have
it
said spoiler alert for all these mini comics.
but yeah, it's, I mean, I don't, should I summarize or someone else can summarize? I've been speaking for a while, but
Just keep going. Finish your thought.
I know just that like the implications of it being like a humanoid creature inside of this like meat pod, like that's just like I, oh man, I was just like, wow, like what an ending. Just oh, crazy.
Yeah, no, I think one of the things that I like about mini comics is they can sit with you forever after you've read them. And I can already tell this is a comic I'm never going to be able to stop thinking about.
Oh God, same.
It's messed up. And again, I mean that complimentary. But it's also just so well crafted. Like the fact that things are unsettling from the start, where this character is excited to get these sort of like this organ meat, because I don't know what people eat normally, but I guess organ meat is better than their normal food supply. And then it's all, everything's a little bit shady. Like, I don't know. I think there are reasons we have rules about how food is produced. And these characters are kind of like skirting all those rules. Like, no one will ever know. It'll be fine. Like, I've never gotten sick.
Yeah, I
So
think there are
you're
so
already set
many,
up
there are
for things
so
to go
many
bad.
questions that are left, like that the way that the plot is introduced in this comic, I think is really, really excellent. Like the narrative threads are teased out slowly. So you have this character first, and she's, really excited about this job because she gets these offcuts, and you're like, wow, things must be really bad. And then you have this other character who's like so blasé about the fact that they're offcuts, and not bothered by that at all. Neither of them seem really like squeamish about dealing with knives and cutting things open. Like it doesn't affect them. They're throwing organs around, and it's like, and she's like, oh, it's not nothing worse than we've ever seen in the sewers. And it's like, man, it must be really bleak. And they talk about this lab-grown meat that goes to surface dwellers somehow. And
Yeah.
it's like, do they know it's from human genome? Why did the creators make that choice? Right. Did they want, was human genome in demand as
Right.
like a specialty?
But that's, I
That's
mean,
actually like a really interesting question. So like a lot of things that get brought up, sorry to cut you off, Jeff, I just like this just came to me. So a lot of people really are excited and celebratory of lab-grown meat as a concept because of the ethical get out of jail free card, I guess.
yeah, because you don't, I mean, depending on how you interpret it, you're not having to kill an animal.
And so if you're rich and you've always had this like deep down like lurid desire to try human flesh and it's lab grown human flesh, does that the same get out of jail free card morally?
Or I was also thinking, like, is it just that they, like, more science has been done on the human genome, so that's what they had handy, and they figured, it's not gonna end up as a human, so it doesn't matter.
And they're never gonna know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, both of those are really interesting threads to think through.
Yeah,
I
it's
mean,
a really good way to approach both science fiction and horror to just sort of world build that way, to just have these loose threads and they all lead somewhere and you're never going to tie them up. And just the way that the story ends. Like I was a little bit frustrated as I was reading it because there's these blank pages, which are a good narrative device. I think they would work better in print where I wouldn't have to stop and think, did something go wrong when I downloaded my file? But no, it's
100%.
on purpose.
I had an even funnier experience downloading my file. So like I was really eager to know like what happened next, right? And so I had those two blank pages, and then my PDF was struggling to load. It was struggling to load the text on the last page, which were like the credits page. And I was like, what's it gonna be? And then it was the credits page. And I'm like, no.
Yeah, and then it just kind of ends abruptly. It's
Yeah.
like, that is the right way to end this
Yeah.
because it's so frustrating.
Because I mean, also like it's such a, they basically present you with this really important question, and then they like leave the answer as a secret, right? It's like
Well,
you
the
kind of
question, I
have to
think the
let it
main
go.
question is
Yeah.
answered as much as it needs to be.
Right.
Like
Yes.
she says, well, Willie, look at that. I mean, at
Yeah.
that point, it's clear, oh, the inside of this is also human-ish.
Right.
Maybe, or maybe it's something else. Maybe it's a cow inside that.
I
It left
guess.
it open-ended enough. Like that's a perfect amount of open-endedness. But yeah, I think the power of this is the like the way that it builds and builds and builds. 'Cause it's yeah, like as you were saying, Jam, it's you introduce here are these people. Oh, I got my new job in the meat lab. And hey, this is better than like struggling in the sewers. You're like, what is this world? And then it's like, yeah, we like have these giant sacks of meat that we just grow in these like coffin-shaped pods. And it's just like, oh, don't worry, I can give you a little because I've got to cut some out. So we just randomly cut chunks out of this meat pod and I can give you some. Oh, why can you give me some? Well, because it's got these like tumors. Oh, don't worry, I eat the tumors all the time. And you're like, what the, this? And it's like, and so you're like, oh, meat pod, that's gross. And it's like, oh, the meat pods have tumors that need to be cut out. You're like, oh, that's gross. And they're like, oh, if you cut open a tumor, it's got teeth and eyes. And you're like, what the fuck? And they're like, hey, let's let a tumor just grow and see what happens. And you're like, that's a terrible idea. Then they cut that open, and now there's like a humanoid body with like hands and feet and and the way they that's drawn, like this malformed human with like teeth growing out of its cheek and like an extra eye and like extra fingers, like, and I mean like not drawn by AI, but better than anything an AI could draw still.
Yeah, perfectly encapsulating that same uncanny valley like body horror that you get from AI.
Yeah.
That figure, the way that embedded figure was drawn is just so good. Damn. Oh, so creepy and like perfectly like formed so that you can tell. It's so hard to draw that, right? So you're drawing something intentionally wrong. And the reader picks up that it's like wrong in an on purpose, uncanny way. Like the double arm that was like connected at the elbow. Like, oh, so
The finger toes. I'm
yeah.
only just like looking at this now again, and like the surrounding tissue is like stomachs and intestines, like
Yeah.
lots of stomachs and lots of intestines.
Yeah. Yeah.
So weird. Love it.
I mean, I
Love
think,
it.
and then I like, I don't know, I like that the characters put it together the same time I'm putting it together, because they open up this pod and they freak out, and then like one of the people just like they're like, wait, if it looks like a person, and they just throw up, and I was like, yeah, you're thinking what I'm thinking, right?
But
Because
then
I mean,
because of these characters and who they are, and they're like, clearly not squeamish at all. They go the next step and think, okay, it'll still be okay if it's not human on the inside.
Right,
Like
exactly.
I would not have gotten that far myself personally.
Looking for an
It's like
untested get out of jail free card.
potentially this thing's alive and they're gonna like cut it open just to look at its insides to like see how human it is. Like, I don't know, it was, yeah, it just, there's a lot of things left unsaid that just like enhance it. But yeah, I mean, I was not hoping it wasn't gonna look like a human when they cut it open, but it did. And like, I again, and that really poses some really certain like important questions, because it's like, well, okay, lab grown meat, you would assume this is going to be a clone of a cow or a chicken or a pig. So like, why the fuck does this look like a person? Like, that's, something's not right here, you know? Which, yeah, this is solid story, solid mini comic. This was great.
Yeah, agreed. I really, really enjoyed it. Great job. Okay, so the next one's going to be a brief one. The romance category was the winner was Naren Stritch for her comic Crossed Signals. Here's a little bio of Naren Stritch, an illustrator based in Germany with a special interest in drawing comics, children's books, and book covers. And unfortunately, try as I might, I could not find a link to buy Crossed Signals. I think all of us couldn't. Okay. So we still wanted to take a chance to honor this work. Congratulations. We're really sad that we can't read it. And it would be cool if we could get a copy of it somehow. So I hope if she hears this to take a note to the public. Would
Yeah,
love to read it.
it would have been nice to read them all. I was surprised. I mean, I was pleased that all the others were available in some form or other, and
Yeah.
it seemed almost like an oversight that this work hadn't been put out in some form, you know?
Yeah, we don't know what's going on. Maybe it was limited in some other way, like by contract. Like perhaps it was contracted to an anthology or something and didn't have wider publication rights yet or something like that. But it wasn't a requirement. So hopefully, maybe someday we'll get to read it. Or if
Also,
someone
like,
knows where it is, they could let us know.
not having any luck looking at this artist's portfolio.
Yeah, I spent a bit of time. All right, so moving on to the horror category, we have Bottoms Up by Barbara Benass. Barbara Benass is an Emmy Award-winning animator and illustrator that lives in the Midwest US. They have over 12 years of production experience on shows, pilots, and commercial projects in almost every position: animation, storyboards, layout, character design, and directing. Their work explores the goofy, emotional, and ominous, and is supported artistically and emotionally by the bugs that live under their flower pots. So, Bottoms Up was about a cooking blogger who got an assignment to make I think the assignment was just to make a dessert, and they wanted to create a banger tiramisu. So they go out and they are trying to get the ingredients for this next level tiramisu, but they are hampered by being possessed by the spirit of the hustle, is kind of what I took away from it. So, initial thoughts, what did you guys think of this one?
This is another strange one for sure. Like, if you were asking me, like, is this a great horror comic? I'm not sure I'd be able to say yes, but I did enjoy reading it quite a bit. The art style is just a lot of fun.
Oh, so much, like so expressive. And I really liked that at times, like I really felt like it was pushing the boundaries of the way that things are drawn and being able to still read it and capture your flow.
Yeah, like this at the end with the character like drunkenly walking up the stairs, like it's not a naturalistic drawing, but you immediately know that that's what's happening. And the whole comic is that, like everything is kind of like abstract and all over the place, but like you can tell what's happening at every point here. And I just also love the colors.
I like the palette. Yeah. I wonder if it was printed in Rhizo.
That
That would
would
be
be
cool.
great.
It would be cool to see it in print. But I don't know that for sure. I'm just wild ass guessing. You see two colors. You're like, oh, it should be Rhizo. Oh, go ahead, Jeff.
Oh, okay, sorry. I don't know. I wanted to like this one. I think the intro I got really sold at the beginning because I love that it starts as a it is drawn like it's a cooking blog, and it's structured like a cooking blog, and even has like the joke where it's like, yeah, you just want me to get to the recipe, but that's not how it works with the algorithm. So I'm gonna have to tell you about the history of tiramisu before I can tell you the ingredients. And like, and then slowly it transforms into a comic that I really liked. And I think I liked the core concept, which is that, yeah, like this hustle and rise and grind culture is a horror show in and of itself. But I definitely bounced off the art at points. There are panels that I like, and then there's just scenes where I just feel like it gets too much, and like the character design shifts in a way where I don't I, like I part of me knows that it's the same character throughout, but there's times where I don't feel like the character looks like the character I started with. And yeah, I don't know, it just got a little bit too abstract and dreamlike at the end, and I just sort of felt like it sort of lost the plot a little bit. Though I did appreciate that, like, after all the craziness, it then finishes with the actual recipe, which I that's great. It's like you've got to go through all this bullshit, and then the actual recipe's at the very end, and you're like, it's just like every cooking blog.
Yeah. I loved this one for the concept, and I love this one for the kind of a message. So the concept, like you mentioned, it's a cooking blog, but I loved how perfectly they replicated it. It felt like a really nice capsule of our current moment, where you have all of these intrusive, horrible ads. And I thought like the ads themselves are really clever as well, and how like the structure of this blog is broken up. And it's now at like a double hostile point, where it's like it's hostile to the reader trying to read it, and it's hostile to the author trying to write it. No one's having a good time here except the advertisers, I guess. And so I really liked that aesthetic and the way that it carried through. Yeah, there's just something so deep to appreciate it because it's not something you want to look at. It's usually not something that someone would choose to immortalize on purpose. And I think that makes it really special to me, that it's like you've taken such care to take these elements as they would appear on a normal blog that everyone is familiar with, and immortalizing them in this way, because I know this moment isn't going to last forever. This aesthetic, the way a blog communicates, that kind of aesthetic language isn't going to exist forever. And the message. So at the end, this character is possessed by the spirit of the hustle, almost like a demon possession, which I think anyone who has lived and is working for jobs to get through, like, can recognize that spirit taking you over, where it no longer becomes the craft. You know, this is someone who is very, very deeply invested in the craft. And the spirit of the hustle is taking them away from that. And there's that horror of like what you love and your passion being perverted for this machine. And what I love is that what takes them out of it at the end is a literal collision with another gig worker.
I hadn't noticed
It's
that. You're right.
it's like a delivery driver, someone who's doing, you know, Shipt delivery or DoorDash or something on a bike. And it would be so easy in this comic, I feel, to be like they get struck with another gig worker, and that person hits and runs because they also have to make their delivery, and they go home and learn a lesson about how hard the world is. But that's not what happens. What happens is that the gig worker stops what they're doing, carries them to their home, and buys them like a piece of chocolate, and then they share the drink together in solidarity of like both trying to survive this hustle culture world. And I thought that message was just so beautiful and really a nice way to end, in addition to the recipe. Yes.
No, I mean that's true. Like I think again, it's I think the themes I'm so on board. Like anything ripping into hustle culture and like capitalism in general, I'm like, good job, good. I yeah, like I say, I got like I appreciate what they were the message was, and I just thought, just I think drawing wise, some of it just kind of like came undone, and I was like, I really don't follow what's happening anymore. Though it did, I that part and sort of like I in the middle, I was like, I have no idea what's going on, and then they got hit by the bike, and I was like, oh, okay, and now like that's a nice ending, and now here's the recipe. Great. Like, that's really good. So, like I said, 75%. Yeah.
I hear you. Like, there were definitely points where I had to look and deconstruct what was happening, but I appreciate it for that because I feel like you can't really know where that edge is until you experiment with it. And that's, again, like calling back to like why mini comics are great. Like, if you wanted to try out this style, it's like, how sketchy can I make something before people start to complain that they have no idea what's going on in this page, you know? Like, mini comics are great for that, you know? It was, I think, 42 pages or something like that. Not if it was a graphic novel length of this, that might have been really painful to figure out that a big chunk of your audience was having trouble parsing it after you've put down 200 pages.
If I had picked this up as a physical paper mini comic at a show, like bought this directly from Barbara, I think I might be a little softer on the art. And I think it's just because this is like unrelated to the content, but like the only way I could get this book was I had to buy a SIM card and share that with a charity that's distributing SIM cards in the Gaza Strip. And then I had to send proof back. And then I got the email, which went to spam, and then it got sent again. And so anyways, I think it just, there was a lot of build up to me finally reading this that I think if I had just directly gotten a physical paper book, you know, I think I maybe would have just been like, oh, that was a nice little mini comic. Where instead it's like, oh man, this PDF sure was hard to obtain. And now I'm unhappy with the art in it.
I had a similar ordeal. My takeaway from that is, boy, it's sure hard to send any money to Gaza.
real. So like to wrap this up to people who aren't familiar, one of the initiatives the Cartoonist Cooperative are doing is you can buy an eSIM for someone in the Gaza Strip, and many artists have volunteered either their shops or their services. So it is a little bit of a convoluted way to purchase a comic. But I think that the initiative is really great, and I encourage others to check it out. If you're not trying to get something for a deadline, like a podcast review, it's
I'm glad that I think my SIM card maybe successfully made it to where it was supposed to go.
Yeah, right. I didn't check if mine was activated. I need to check.
I don't know how to do that even.
You have to like log in, and then it'll tell you whether it's been activated or not. I've bought a couple, and all of them did end up getting activated.
Okay. I also really like that this ends with the recipe. Like, I kind of feel like I want to try this recipe.
Yeah.
And that is the epitome of the recipe blog, right? Where, like, you get to the end, and, oh, like, this was the destination.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, for the cook, you know, art finds a way through the
crack
of the system.
Uh-huh. Yeah, okay. To be clear, I definitely don't regret supporting people in the Gaza Strip. I just...
Yeah, it's a hassle.
Just like, because I was trying to obtain this on a deadline, I was getting stressed out about getting this PDF.
We hear you. It's the mechanism, not the medium.
Yeah.
The last three episodes we've done of Trade Raiders, the villain every time has been capitalism.
Or what we can take away from that.
Sure, okay. I'm sure we're the only podcast criticizing capitalism.
Yeah, we're outliers for that.
All right. Okay, the last comic in this slate of winners is in the fantasy category, The Bird Daughters by Madeline McGrain. Madeline McGrain is a cartoonist and illustrator living in Minneapolis. She graduated from Minneapolis College of Art and Design in 2016 with a BFA in comic art. She is the author and illustrator of the Accursed Vampire graphic novel. So if you've seen this one, it's the one with the little bald vampire in his head and gets into mischief. I didn't put that together, and I definitely have read some Accursed Vampire. Yeah, so this is a fantasy story, and if you haven't read these mini comics yet, this one is free to read on her website, so you can just go and get it right now. It's a fantasy story fable about a kingdom where a king in order to protect his crown or legacy, I forget, he decided to have daughters with a bunch of birds. And the bird daughters were kind of ostracized or ostrich-ized because the birds didn't want to hang around and be queens because they're birds. And so they went back to being birds. And the people didn't really want to hang out with these birds because they were kind of sent around like assassin. And also they were these hybrids that were kind of strange to the kingdom. And so the bird daughters grew up kind of isolated and sent on missions, let's say distasteful missions at times. And the story follows one of these bird daughters on her mission to assassinate a political rival or something like that. And the regret question mark that she feels about that mission, it's a little bit ambiguous about whether or not she necessarily regrets what she's done, because she does seem to feel really duty bound. And then the ending of the story is the king dies and the birds all decide what to do with themselves. And I thought that part for me was a really interesting meditation on like what freedom means, because it meant something different to each of these birds, bird women. Right. So that was the bird women and, or the bird daughters, sorry.
Yeah.
That was the bird daughters. What did you think?
I like this one a lot. This is probably like my number three, or no, maybe my number two. It was like, yeah, this one was, I really enjoyed this. I think it had a dreamlike quality, but also it just felt like a fable. It felt like a Grimm's fairy tale, like very much a traditional Grimm's fairy tale where it's just like, and then she bit his hand off and kept it in a jar, like a real fable you tell a child, you know, that kind of stuff. But no, it had all the trappings of like a good fable, right? Like the weirdness of, because they don't explain, like the king took these birds as his wives and now he's got bird daughters. We're not going to explain how that works. He has bird daughters now. Let's move on, you know? But it's good. Like I liked the narrative voice of the daughter was really clear. And then, yeah, the interaction she has with this, she sent to the sort of rival and he's trying to charm her, but then she is duty bound. So she like beats him up and bites his hand off and then keeps his hand in a jar. And then her father dies. Then, yeah, like going through what each daughter does after. Like, again, that felt very like fable where, you know, it's like, and then this person went on to do this. And then this, like, it's like it's like made me think of like when you sing a song and it's like, you know, first the woman that swallowed a fly, and, you know, there's the this and the that, and then you're listing all the stuff. So like, here are all the achievements of all the bird daughters, you know, like it's, or maybe it's not like that song, but just like, yeah, you get that in a fable where it's like you go through.
Yeah, I get you. There's kind of like a rhythm to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, this was really great. I think actually this was probably my second favorite mini comic. This is probably edges out Fancies.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this. I read it as kind of like a character study of these bird daughters. And I think that's the thing that this has that a traditional fable doesn't often have, is like an inner life for the characters. Whereas fables tend to be just, here's a bunch of stuff that happened. And this is more like, after reading it, you really have to think about like, what is it like to be a bird daughter? Like what is going on in their heads? Because they're so, like they speak so mundanely about these basically murder sprees that they go on behalf of the kingdom. They're these like unapologetic aristocrats. Like the way you maintain an aristocracy is you send your bird daughters to murder your political opponents. And like, there's no question of that system. This is just how it is. The only thing that's clear is that they're half bird. What's that?
That's politics.
Yeah. Yeah. But then they also have this kind of, like, I agree, Jam, I'm not sure that it's regret, but it's definitely that they're not enjoying being the like enforcers of the kingdom. Like they don't care about this kingdom. They care about their father, but as soon as he's gone, like they're all going to go off and do their own thing. Like there's no, in, like they, the first of the bird daughters, when we find out what's everyone going to do. No, I guess it's the second one, the crow is planning on having a place of influence in the new regime. So they kind of already know, like, we're not gonna get to be king. Like, we're not the gonna continue the royal line. Someone else is gonna take over, and we'll just be around. And like, we've already planned for that. So yeah, they're just so interesting to think about, like, what is it? Like, what is your motivation? And they all have a different motivation. They all have a very different thing that they would rather be doing, but then they're just waiting for their chance.
I don't know. I think maybe like human bird hybrid assassins might be a more effective governing system than what we currently have in place.
So you only say that because the bird human hybrids aren't looking to murder you.
Right. You are free
Yeah,
to vote for the bird human hybrid assassin party.
of your
Don't
choice
come complaining.
between the two options of bird murder assassin parties, you get this one or the other one.
You get crow to eat your eyes out, or you get, like raptor to eat your eyes
You've got
out.
choices. You've got choices in the system.
I really liked the style. I liked the art style of this book. I really liked the large fields of solid black. And I felt it was really beautifully rendered. Like it was stylized in a there was like a lot of style put into it, into the way that the birds were drawn and kind of iconic almost, I want to say, like in an iconic way, but still managed to be like very expressive and very captivating. So I really enjoyed the style.
Actually, the gray tones came in really well. Like gray dots or like halftone dots don't usually translate well on the screen, but these actually came through really nicely too.
It was interesting because, like, the other books we got as ebooks, and like, I don't read a lot of ebook comics. I tend to read things on the internet, and so my assumption going in was that, oh, I thank goodness there's one that's just a website, that'll be easier. But in retrospect, I think the ebooks were actually easier because I can just stuff them all in a folder and then I have them right there, and if I need them again. Like, say if I'm recording a podcast, whereas like if it's on the internet, I have to go and find that website again, and that's a little bit more of a hassle. So I don't know. It was an interesting sort of experiment in like reading styles. I don't know what conclusions I come from that, but
Yeah, it's like in the spirit of mini comics being an experiment, it was also an experiment in delivery mechanisms for short form cartoon works.
yeah.
And yeah, I think there's also something to be said for accessibility versus durability. So the website one, as we just mentioned, like you can just refer someone to it very easily. It's very accessible, but we don't know what's going to happen. This link is going to break someday. Maybe the artist will maintain it for free within their portfolio, but time moves on. There's certainly a lot of things in my portfolio that I've curated out. And so something like a PDF or a physical mini comic is a lot more durable.
This is yeah, that's true, because maintaining a web comic is not free. Like, if it's your comic, you have to pay for the hosting.
Oh, super, you super do. Ask me how I know. Ask me how we all know.
Yeah, or you just sign everything over to Webtoon, including movie rights.
Do not.
And then hope that they continue and don't turn into LiveJournal,
Right.
and then it's not doesn't exist anymore. Or you have to, if it's your own site, you have to maintain the HTML because HTML is not stable. It needs to update every few years.
I disagree. HTML is way more stable than a lot of other systems.
Okay, maybe it's
So,
because
like
I have a WordPress.
like your
WordPress.
CSS should still render the way that it does. It's just not going to be contemporary styled. But like as I'm maintaining my archives, the ones that were coded the most simply seem to be the easiest ones to
All
maintain.
right,
The
okay.
ones that I'm having the most trouble with were the ones that were using like the fancy CMS system du jour. Like, I'm
Right,
having
right, right.
double of the time maintaining those, and I'm actually probably just going to rip it up and start over with something very, very basic. So I don't know. I think there's an interesting side conversation to be had some other time about web comics and web media and archiving of that culture. of those cultural touchstones, those cultural elements, the art of these times, there is an ephemeral quality to it because it can degrade a lot more than media of even the last two generations.
Yeah.
And maybe that's something that we have to think about. I think it's something that I'm already starting to think about.
Like with this, after this whole discussion about mini comics, I have mini comics on my bookshelf that I bought at conventions 20 years ago. Whereas there are web comics that I remember reading from people who have gone on to do fantastic graphic novels, and those original web comics are not online anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a few that I can think of for sure.
I don't know, this, I mean, like, the Bird Daughters to me feels, I can just see the mini comic. I can see the folded paper, maybe with like a colored stock for the cover, and just like, you know, it just, this would be such a breakout hit at the like zine festival or whatever, you know? And I don't know, all of these, I think I would love to just have a physical copy. I mean, and this is it's a weird thing, because like obviously for the review podcast, I was very keen to just like download all the PDFs and like throw them in a Dropbox folder, so I could just read them wherever, like Jonathan was talking about. And like two of these I read on my phone just because of time constraints. I don't recommend, but did it. But if each of these artists had a link to be like, oh, like send me $10 and I'll mail you a physical copy, I think I probably would have got, like, even though I would probably would have bought that in addition to the PDF, just so that after this review, I could then like add these to my mini comic shelf. Cause I think these are all good. And these are like things, these are the kinds of mini comics I would pick up at a show. And then a few weeks later, these would be the ones I'd be like, oh wow, this is great. I'm really glad I picked that up. Really,
I was gonna say the opposite, because like these are books, if these were physical books, I would absolutely pick these up at a show. But when am I ever gonna run into a cartoonist from New Zealand?
Right.
Like, we're never gonna be at the same shows as each other.
To get there. Although I do want to shout out something really fun about the New Zealand comic scene. Okay, so this is I happened to be in New Zealand last year, and I was walking around Wellington and I saw posters for a mini show, and it was the week prior to me being in Wellington, and I was like, no. But then I decided to walk into a random library in Wellington, because I was like, whatever, let's see what libraries are like in New Zealand. And there was a vending machine full of mini comics.
What? So
I was able to buy a blind bag mini comic from a machine called Lucky Drop. I'll send you guys a picture so you can put it in the thing. But it was so cool. I was so happy.
Speaking of things that someone should build who's not us.
What okay. A great idea.
There was a Cloudscape meeting once where someone had mentioned, like, what if we bought a vending machine and stuffed it full of mini comics and like put it outside of a library or a bookstore or something. And like, yeah, when nobody had the capacity to take that any further, but just like that idea was like, yeah, what a great idea. Like,
yeah. So it was really cool. And I agree that sometimes it's hard for comics communities that are geographically very distributed to get mini comics from each other. And so how nice that we at least have the digital option. And as I mentioned before, like two New Zealand artists were featured in this award show. So yeah, maybe someday it'll be easier to move around and we'll be able to get zines from everyone.
I mean,
we need more places to do what Shortbox does and have like a box of like a bunch of different small publications from like different people.
It's something that I've been thinking about a lot. So I do also want to shout out Shortbox, because several of these nominees / winners were originally Shortbox comic
characters.
Is Shortbox still happening?
I think no.
Not in the same way, at least.
So Shortbox as a physical publishing entity is no longer. And I've read a few interviews with Zainab, and it seems that the main reason is just, as you know, Jeff, the logistics of running a publishing situation is very, very challenging, and it wasn't in line with her goals. She saw herself more as like a curator and an editor, and she wanted to move the Enterprise more into that. I think the Shortbox Comic Fair is happening next year.
I think so.
So there still will be a fair. I don't know if it will continue in that capacity, but I know that other comics fairs are popping up. Silver Sprocket was another entity that put out a few of these mini comics, including Sunflowers by Kesey Young, which is a really, really good one. Which was nominated in the Autobio category. Yeah. So I think I don't think they have like a box the way that Shortbox did, but it was cool to see more people jumping into this space.
Yeah. I mean, all right. You're talking about, you know, reconciling all the new or previous episode, we talked about reconciling all the like newsprint strips into like a newsletter that gets emailed to you. But like, I don't know, I'm sure like at a certain point I would have to cancel it because I'd be cluttering my apartment. But like, I kind of think it would be kind of cool to just get like a box of mini comics in the mail once a month. I think it would be great until my partner's like, yeah, you're going to have to start recycling some stuff because there's no space on the shelves anymore.
As much as I love mini comics, they're not the easiest thing to store because there's no consistency in the shape or size or format or whether they sit on a bookshelf without falling over.
Use photo boxes personally.
I have a long box that I saved that I did not keep the comics from. That I have some of my more awkwardly shaped ones in.
Yeah, I have a little cardboard box from when I worked at the Desairs art store. And it had a little snap lid and like a little snap. And I decoupaged it with like ads from like an old like mainstream comic. Like it's got the like 3D specs and stuff. And then I have acid-free paper on the inside, and I have my weird-shaped mini comics in this little box that's been decoupaged with like old comic ads on the outside.
That's fun.
Yeah.
All right. Well, mini comics—they're great. Should we wrap this up on final thoughts for the mini comics awards in general? Maybe.
Yeah, this was a fun little side adventure. I enjoyed reading all these books. We should do this every year.
I'd be down to read the next year's mini comic nominees. Yeah, I thought it's been fun. It's fun to sort of go break it down to these little bite-sized works.
Yeah, so I want to say that that's probably on me because, like, as I mentioned, like I was keeping an eye on the Mini Comics Awards as someone who was contributing to it. And it wasn't until I was watching the award show I'd be like, oh, that'd be really cool. This is a trade waiter. So like it's on me for not having my stuff together to be able to review things before the awards comes out. But next year, ideally, if I remember, it would be fun to do them by category and like read the nominees and then have that as a piece that people can explore before the awards come out. It's like a hype train. But who knows? Depends on what's going on in 2025.
Yeah, I mean, kind of, I mean, even like as like a little series, you know, like go through each category as an episode, like that'd be really fun.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Like half an hour kudos. Per category.
Yeah.
All right, but kudos again to the Cartoons Cooperative for putting this together. Kudos to all of the winners and all the nominees. I really encourage you to go and check out. There are lots of links to many of these, and many of them are available to buy. Some of them are available free to read. Mini comics, yay! Comics in general, yay!
Yeah, no, that was fun. I really enjoyed reading all of these. It was something kind of very different and fun. And I think they paired really nicely with also then doing Nancy too. Like these. Both reading both of these works very close together felt very appropriate.
Yeah, good. All right, so we want to do shout outs.
What if for shout outs we shout out one more mini comic that we've read at some point?
Okay.
Because otherwise I don't have a shout out. I'm going to shout out the other star of my mini comic collection, which is the hand assembled, like dozen or so page mini comic of Smile that Raina Telgemeier did before Scholastic had heard of Smile. That is like, I mean, it's Smile. Like, how can you not treasure the very first version of that that was out in the world that I bought from her at a convention in Toronto very, very, very long time ago?
I think it came with a toothbrush.
Oh, I didn't get the one with the toothbrush.
Oh, I'll have to look that up. Okay, I think I know. Yeah, I'm Jam. I'm going to shout out, as I mentioned before, Sunflowers by Casey Young. It was another nominee in the autobio category, and it's a kind of first-person experience of going through a bipolar manic episode, which I thought was really affecting and really, I learned a lot from it, and I recommend it to anyone.
I haven't read any of Kesey's comics yet, but I started following them on social media because their art style is just so good.
So gorgeous.
I gotta get
Sunflowers was
one of his
gorgeous.
comics.
I'm gonna shift away from, I had something in mind, but since we're talking mini comics, this makes me want to just like pull all my mini comics off the shelf and flip through them, because like I know that the last time I went through the process of downsizing, I could not bear to let go of any of these mini comics, but I also don't have any immediate titles that come to mind, which I feel a little embarrassed about. But then I actually just thought there's actually kind of a nice shout out that I think feels appropriate with TCAF coming up. So locally in Vancouver, Colin Upton has been making mini comics for, I don't know, 30, 40 years. And he's drawn mini comics with burnt sticks. He's done mini comics like in ink and charcoal. He's done abstract fictional stories and lots of autobio work. I think a lot of his work at the end of the day is deeply autobio, even when it's fictional. And he did a series called Diabetes Funnies that are about his being diagnosed and dealing with diabetes, which was over about, I don't know, six or seven different mini comics that he put out. And I have all of them. They're very part of my precious collection of mini comics. But those are also getting collected into a trade paperback by Conundrum Press. And they're going to be, it'll be one of the books featured at TCAF.
Oh, that's great news.
Yeah, so Colin Upton is going to be at TCAF for the first time ever.
Oh, wow.
And he's going to be represented with his singular trade paperback collection of his minis. But if you go to VanCAF, I'm sure Colin will have a 6-foot table full to the brim with every mini comic he's ever made in his entire career, because he never lets them go out of print. So yeah, I don't know. Just, we're talking about mini comics. I feel like someone's got to mention Colin Upton, because he's the king of mini comics.
What's our next book going to be?
Our next book is going to be Roaming by Mariko and Jillian Tamaki.
Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. We'd like to thank Sleuth for the music. You can subscribe to our podcast wherever podcasts are found.
Thanks for listening.